Welcome to Federal Insights for April, sponsored by Pegasystems.
The National Institutes of Health is really a collection of agencies, but its components have many information technology needs in common. Tom Temin here. To better understand NIH from a digital transformation perspective, I spoke with Andrea Norris, Director of the Center for IT and the NIH Chief Information Officer.
NIH is actually a collection of, it is the National Institutes of Health, plural, of 27 separate institutes and centers, each one focused on their own particular area of research and science, disease, or area of study. But we are collectively all united in our mission to seek fundamental knowledge about the nature and behavior of living systems and how to apply that knowledge to advance health, to lengthen life, and to reduce or eliminate illness and disability. And so while we each have a different focus in the area of biomedical research and study, the way in which we go about that, there are a great number of similarities. So we fund our budget is at close to $40 billion. We fund about 80% of that goes out to about 2,500 in universities and medical centers around the country. We support about 300,000 researchers around the country each year. And so a lot of our activity in our institutes is focused on finding the best areas, the most promising areas of science and discovery. About 60% of what we fund there are investigator, researcher-initiated ideas and hypothesis for discovery. And so we are constantly seeking how to fund the most promising science. And we are not lacking wonderful opportunities. Really, our constraint is just the availability of resources to fund. We also have an intramural research program on campus where we have thousands of incredibly expert scientists and researchers in about 110 labs and facilities on our campus in Bethesda and some of the near Maryland areas. We have a campus in North Carolina. We have some locations up in Baltimore and some other places, but we're predominantly in Bethesda. And those scientists are rich in what we refer to as our intramural research program. And so across the variety of health areas and disease, predominantly doing basic research, some clinical research, and translational research.
All right. So all of this has to be supported by IT, yep, both at the corporate level, if you will, and also at the individual institute or even lab level. Yep. How does it all work?
I, in addition to being the chief information officer, I'm actually a director of one of the 27 institutes, which is called the Center for Information Technology. And that's really an IT service providing institute for the other 26. And so what we do in that institute is really focus in on the core corporate computational infrastructure. So NIH invests about $1 billion a year in our computational infrastructure on campus because of the incredible need for today. In today's world, the computer is a basic science instrument, just like a microscope was 20 years ago and today as well. And so we invest heavily in what I call the broad enterprise infrastructure. We modernized our network over the last few years. We now have one of the largest distributed 100 gigabit networks. We've watched the traffic that we're moving through that network double every year since we've done it. We're now moving about 6 petabytes of data a day.
And let me just ask you a quick follow question on that. Do you separate the scientific and research activity network from the payroll and the administrative systems and so forth, or is it all one unified infrastructure?
Our backbone network is one core because the predominant data that we're moving through there is scientific by far. But we do have set up, in some cases, we architect virtual local networks for specialized scientific instrumentation. We also have a scientific, what's referred to as a scientific DMZ, that can be used for dedicated needs for fast traffic for science purposes. So we have a network. We've also, over the last few years, developed the world's fastest supercomputer that is solely designed and dedicated for biomedical research, and we call it BioWolf.
And that is NIH owned and operated?
That is NIH owned and operated and used by our intramural researchers. In fact, more than half of our researchers now are using that to do their science. Again, we've watched that grow tremendously over the last few years. Things for like cryo-EM, molecular dynamics, genomics work, all heavily dependent on that supercomputing resource.
And you have a CIO at the HHS level.
Yes.
And then there are CIOs at many of the institute levels.
Yes.
So how do you relate in the FATARA context and so forth? And again, that idea of control, but also flexibility that the law seems to create a little bit of a challenge for.
Yeah. So when FATARA was established at the department level, we worked very closely with at the department, and the operating divisions are what they're referred to as an HHS, the CIOs there and key leadership at the department, to really put in place how we could best implement FATARA in a way that reflected the diverse missions of the various organizations, from CDC to FDA to NIH, Office of the Secretary, et cetera, but also recognize the local unique environments. And so I think we came up with a very solid approach for how to execute FATARA. So we work very closely. We present our budget requests. We work with the department each year in a prospective way on what the big IT investments are. We work very closely on our acquisition strategies. Certain thresholds are dealt with at the operating division level or local level, in some cases within our own institutes at NIH. And then others are escalated down to the department for their particular review and oversight as well. And so that way you get to focus your attention on the things, I think, at the right level that matter the most and have the biggest strategic impact and return on investment.
Andrea Norris is director of the Center for IT and the NIH Chief Information Officer. We'll have more after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
High-risk programs, information silos, and disconnected government experiences are a thing of the past. Pega transforms your organization from digital chaos to streamlined digital automation. Pega's no-code software includes artificial intelligence, robotic automation, and a unified government-ready platform. Pega empowers your employees, streamlines your operations, and delivers personalized experiences to the right people at the right time. Now that's digital transformation done right. Learn more at pega.com/government.
Welcome back to our interview with Andrea Norris, Director of the Center for IT and the NIH Chief Information Officer. In this segment, we started with more about the supercomputing infrastructure and how that contributes to digital transformation.
We spent a lot of time actually doing interviewing and spending time with our scientists on what their projected needs were, because at the time, again, this is 4 or 5 years ago, when we were working on we knew we had to fix the network, we had to modernize that, we saw the big data tsunami coming towards us and saw the change in how science was going to be occurring. And so we were working that, but we knew we needed that powerful compute capability as well. And so we spent a lot of time really grounded with our researchers on the direction, prospective direction of the science. We brought in outside help to help us determine the best kind of architecture for that. And we really have kind of a production-capable, oriented resource there, where it's designed for not the experimental supercomputing uses, but the typical kinds of computational needs across our various disciplines of research. That model has worked well for us. We're just now doing a new assessment for our next 5 years, actually, and we're finding, learning a lot from the directions we need to go in terms of broadening both the type of compute, the denominator of who and how we're supporting it, and our approach for close support for each individual investigator.
And you found that the other federal supercomputing facilities, say, as operated by the Weather Service, for example, or somewhere in energy, they weren't fundamentally the correct architecture or design for the types of algorithms that you needed at NIH?
Yeah, and this was designed and is supported really solely for biomedical research. It is the only one in the world that is designed and operated with that in mind. So we have more than 600 different applications that our researchers are using. We provide a lot of very personalized support of expert folks who can help these researchers tune their algorithms, structure their data in a way that will optimize both the compute and the power of what they're doing analytically.
And this was built from industry standard parts, as supercomputers tend to be nowadays.
Absolutely. It's all commercial clusters and storage capabilities.
And just as a quick question, how did you manage to get the power, the electricity, into the system?
Well, we had to invest. So we have a data center on campus. So again, we actually help generate our chilled water and some of our with some of our electricity on campus. We run our own police department, our own fire department. It's like a small city almost, a small town. And so we invested as well in that facility infrastructure. And so we married those investments over the last few years. This took 5 years this year is our last year of what we call the modernization of that.
And then you're going to start over again.
Mm-hmm. Our assessment now, our strategic planning for the next 5 years.
And is there a chargeback model for the different institutes that use it based on their usage and storage?
So we have a couple of approaches. One is the institutes contribute funds from the Intramural Research Program, the different institutes collectively. And then there are small charges for accounts. We've also used a particular model where there was a need for very dedicated use for particular researchers, where institutes were able to do, we call it a buy-in model. They could acquire certain computational nodes and resources. We would operate and manage it centrally. And then at the end of they have priority use of it. At the end of 3 years, it goes back to the common good. So,
okay. And just a quick follow-up question before we move on to your data strategy. And that is, what about the cloud? How does that figure in? You've got a data center, you've got a supercomputer, you've got lots of data. Is the cloud a factor for commercial cloud?
Yeah, cloud is going to be a very, very important part of our strategy in data science. So about a year ago, we established a first-time-ever data science strategic plan. I would encourage folks who are interested to go to our website and take a look at it. And this was after much thought and care as to, again, how we could move what we call our national biomedical research ecosystem forward in a cohesive way to really leverage the power of compute, the power of the big data programs, and ability to really generate and harness intelligence out of data that we could not do before today. And so the state of the art in today's environment is really we have challenges with making our data what we call fair, findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable. As we funded research activities over these many years, the data is typically stored in a researcher's computer, perhaps at a university or medical center data center. And so it's in a variety of different places and areas, and it's hard for other researchers to know how to access that data. Is it useful for them in their own research activities? And then how to make that and leave that for the next researcher.
So, because just to interject here, it seems like there could be a data set or sets in the domain of the Eyes, Ears, Nose, and Throat Institute that could be of value to, you know, the institute that's one step lower down on the body.
Absolutely. And so as we're finding now, so it started with, you know, our ability to generate, or a big contributor was our ability to generate these vast amounts of genomic data. So if you think back in 2003, it took $3 billion in decades to be able to do the human genome.
Sure.
In 2010, it was $10 million and months. In 2019, it is less than $1,000 to sequence a human genome in a matter of hours. So we've been able to generate this vast amounts of genomic data. In the same window of time, we saw the rise of the electronic health record and the adoption of that in our healthcare system. We now have far more data, access to data with environmental data, sensor data, Fitbit data, all of these things. And in fact, we're investing very heavily, and I'll share a bit about those in a moment, of some very particular what we call precision medicine kind of initiatives, where we are able to take all of that information about individuals and really look at opportunities for discovery in ways we never could before. So that ability to be able to find and access data and use it in ways we never could before was really, really important for us. And so that's really the underpinnings of our strategic plan.
Andrea Norris, Director of the Center for IT and the NIH Chief Information Officer. Still more to come after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
High-risk programs, information silos, and disconnected government experiences are a thing of the past. Pega transforms your organization from digital chaos to streamlined digital automation. Pega's no-code software includes artificial intelligence, robotic automation, and a unified government-ready platform. Pega empowers your employees, streamlines your operations, and delivers personalized experiences to the right people at the right time. Now that's digital transformation done right. Learn more at pega.com/government.
Welcome back to the final segment of our interview with Andrea Norris, Director of the Center for IT and the NIH Chief Information Officer. Here, Norris describes some of the major data projects.
Things like our Cancer Moonshot program that is heavily...
Yes, we've had interviews on that too on this show.
Heavily vested in, you know, massive data repositories and
the
data
million
sets.
Person research project.
The All of Us program, that is, and we now have more than 200,000 people who have signed up, and it's just been open for a little more than a year. And so we're very excited about that. So we have that. We have our Alzheimer's research, our HEAL initiative, which is our part in the opioid epidemic, the studies there. We have our TopMed, which is, again, another precision medicine initiative looking at heart, lung, and blood kinds of issues.
Sure. And that gets to a big question that would cover a lot of those elements, the infrastructure, the modernizing and dealing with, the analytical tools, even the sustainment for when they might be disposed of, and that is anonymizing.
Absolutely.
And protecting the individual in all of this data, because you have, when you mentioned sensors, as well as research projects, or people that sign up to be guinea pigs in a larger project, in that case, you've got many different types of data, many different
right.
structures of data, and yet you have that anonymity requirement for all of them.
Yes.
That must be quite a challenge right there.
Yes, but so the National Center for Bioinformatics at the National Library of Medicine, NCBI, is really our core repository for all of our genomic study data, whether that's human genomics or not. And we are moving, actually, in the process of moving their sequence read archive data structure. It's about 30-plus petabyte size. It's the
wow.
world's largest public access repository of genomic data. But that data, when it's human genomic data, it comes into NIH de-identified. We don't even have the identification associated with it. So that's important for us, obviously. But for programs like the All of Us, which is collecting that kind of data, we have invested heavily in making sure our security protocols are in place, our privacy protocols are in place to make sure that your data, if you contribute it, is protected and is only going to be used, and this is true across all of our research programs, is only going to be used for the purposes of which you provided your consent for. That's another important piece
Got
that
it.
Goes beyond security. It's really that we're only using your data in the ways of which you have agreed to have it used for. And so we invest heavily in our security protocols, programs, layers and layers of protections to assure that those things are honored throughout the life of our having those precious resources.
So zooming back out, you mentioned five different elements mm-hmm. of this data strategy. What is the overall vision for data, and how is it different from the what exists now and what is what the institutes are capable of now.
Right. So we really want to be able to make sure that we are taking maximum advantage of the data that we are have invested in or continue to invest in. So we have kind of a multi-pronged strategy. So let me take the big data programs first. These are the All of Us, the Cancer Moonshot, the programs we just talked about. So for those, we are moving those data sets into commercial cloud environments. And under the Data Science Strategic Plan, we created this new initiative called the STRIDES Initiative, where we formed partnerships initially with the commercial cloud platform providers. We have our partners now are Google and Amazon Web Services, where we worked with them and said, will you go down this experiential journey with us? We want to be able to make it so that these large data sets are available in the cloud. They're too big for researchers to download the data and work on them locally. We want the researcher to come to that environment, bring their tools, bring their own data, work with by themselves or work in collaboration with others that they may find, leveraging the analytic tools that may be available there, either that we have developed or funded through research grants or through the commercial industry and partners and nonprofit partners that may be willing to share those, make those accessible. So we can accelerate who's being able to do that kind of research, the tools, the access to the information. So we're not reinventing the wheel over and over again.
Sure. And what is the governance for all of these data sets? Because you may grant one institution, they create a data set or use one or create an analytical tool or use one. Do those go into the public domain at that point? And are they available to other grantees? And how do you work all of that?
Yeah, so excellent question. So some of it depends on the program. Most of the work that we fund, of course, through NIH is public domain, you know, or through funded research. Access is provided through people who are have been identified as appropriate for doing research on the data. So it's either general public domain or set aside specifically for research purposes. And we have a series of policies and structures and governance. Sometimes it's at the program level. Sometimes it's at the institute level. It's often also at the university or research institution level to make sure that the data is being used for the appropriate research purposes, that it's a qualified researcher that has, you know, funding and the expertise and rights to
access it. You have to have some bona fides to be able to get into this domain in the first place.
Absolutely. And so, and then other data is just public domain, public access data. And that's much of our data that we try to make, accessible to anyone who has an interest to be able to access it. Again, it's secure, it's protected.
Plus, there's historical data. There was the famous Framingham Heart Study and so on. I imagine that is probably still relevant to some researchers.
Absolutely, and that's a big part of our TopMed initiative I just mentioned from the National Heart, Lung, and Blood, because it's such a long, rich data resource. And so that is actually part of that precision medicine initiative that our Heart, Lung, and Blood is doing, leveraging both the Framingham Heart Study data and other data that's been collected.
And it shows that people's data is still useful.
Absolutely.
Even after they're gone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. These are decadal kinds of observational and, you know, clinical trial studies. And so they're rich with knowledge and insights. Now with that, we have different tools and technologies to look across domains, across areas. I mean, what we know so much about the human health and body, but there's so much more we don't know and don't understand. And so
sure,
it's all very, very important for us.
Andrea Norris, Director of the Center for IT and the NIH Chief Information Officer. To hear this interview again, log on to federalnewsnetwork.com and search Federal Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for April, sponsored by Pegasystems on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.